Welcome to the Epic Angels podcast. Every episode, we put the spotlight on one of our portfolio startups. My name is Mikey.
And my name is Hester. After the conversation with the founder, Mikey and I will have a conversation together with one of our Epic Angels to reflect on this investment.
Imagine you're our small business owner. You don't have an accountant because they're too expensive and accounting firms are unaffordable. You have no background in accounting and are pretty much afraid of numbers. Existing solutions in the market like QuickBooks are too complex. They're built for accountants, they're not built for founders. And even if you have an accountant doing your bookkeeping, it's still not clear what the numbers they show actually mean. So as a result, you don't even know if your business is healthy or how to make it healthy. This is exactly where Metrics comes in. Metrics is the world's most founder-friendly financial analytics app based in Pakistan and UAE. It's simple to use and provides services like tracking metrics, producing reports, benchmarking, AI, localized integrations, a lot. All to help founders make informed strategic and operational decisions and make their lives easier. In short, Metrics is the CFO for small businesses. Nina and Omar, you are the founders of Metrics. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mikey.
Thank you.
That gave me goosebumps.
good start. So, Nina, you have over a decade of experience in supporting thousands of entrepreneurs across Pakistan, Iraq, Bangladesh, Nepal, through your experience with the World Bank, USAID, startup accelerators, and being a partner at a Pakistan-focused VC fund. Omar, you are the accounting finance expert behind Metrics, and you are an experienced auditor with years within the Big Four, and you have a deep understanding of the financial issues that the startups and SMEs have. So I want to hear more about you. Who are you and how did you come up with Metrics?
Okay, so, you know, it's super easy when you look back and connect the dots. So anytime now that I'm able to look back at my career, I'm able to see that entrepreneurship and business is the one major theme that my life has been kind of centered around. I came into entrepreneurship and business at a very young age. I think I was 6 years old when I started to make things and sell them to my family and my neighbor. I was organizing my cousins into like four higher labor groups when I was about 10 years old. And that's how it all started. But I realized very early on that financial independence, especially for women from where I came through business most of the time. Women with careers were not very common. And since then, there's just been no looking back. I started my first formal small business when I was 14 years old. It was a henna business that I ran for a decade. I made a ton of mistakes, through which I learned everything about how small businesses actually operate in emerging markets. So then when I started working at an accelerator program, I was already somebody who'd been on the inside. So I could empathize a lot of times with the businesses that I was supporting. I ran in that accelerator program for about 4 years. I worked in Pakistan, a little bit in Bangladesh and Nepal, before I then joined the World Bank as a consultant on the Women Entrepreneurs Financing Initiative. Again, getting to work with hundreds of women entrepreneurs in different cities of different sizes of businesses. I worked with the USAID at the same time, training about 1,000 women entrepreneurs again across tier two, tier three cities. With the World Bank, I also got to work in Iraq. So, you know, again, the flavor of my career has been in working with small businesses and figuring out what their challenges around growth are and figuring out what the drivers around success are and trying to solve it for them, because I truly believe in entrepreneurship as one of the strongest economic forces in the world that has the ability to change individuals' lives, to change the pathway of families, and to change how society and community operates. So it's something I feel very strongly about, and I've been very lucky to get a seat at the table on so many different sides and to work with so many entrepreneurs in the last decade of my life.
Yep. So unlike Mina, I never started entrepreneurship early. I didn't even know that word until I was pretty far into my life or my early life. But through Mina, I also got introduced to small businesses. So I started as a finance expert. I'm a chartered accountant. I started my career at PwC. And, you know, one day Mina pulled me in. She was running this accelerator program. And she's like, you know, accounting is easy for you. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty, you know, it's fine. And they're like, but she's like, it's not easy for these small businesses. So why don't you just come and, you know, teach them accounting and do it for free? I was hesitant at first, but she dragged me to a pitching event. And I was like, I don't want to go there. You know, I'm just an accountant. I'm doing my job. I don't care about pitches. I don't know what startups are. That's how I started that pitching event. I didn't even sit on a seat. I sat on the floor.
He was mad. He did not want to be there. He sat on the floor behind a pillar.
I sat on the floor behind a pillar and I started listening to the pitches and the passion of these startups and them trying to actually solve real problems. It sort of grew on me within like very quickly, like within the first 15, 20 minutes. And by the end of it, I didn't want to leave. I mean, I was like, you know, the pitches aren't over. We can go. And I'm like, no, let me just, you know, meet with these people. They're so nice. And so I started working with startups like that and small businesses, and pretty soon found that work to be much more fulfilling, even though they didn't have any money to pay me, but it was much more fun, much more fulfilling than working with big soulless corporations at PwC and, you know, where there's no sign of passion anywhere. And so I got dragged into that and I formalized that practice, became a virtual CFO for a lot of businesses, small businesses, a lot of works did it for free or, you know, whatever you can pay me, just pay me, it's fine. Those business owners used to offer me equity. I'm like, you know, your equity is not worth anything. I'll just do it for free. So I formalized that practice. Then I joined a VC fund, one of the first VC funds out of Pakistan. They brought me on. I was the first ever VC analyst in Pakistan's history. So because I had a finance background and I'd worked with startups, they're like, you have a good combination. So spent a couple of years there. We made four investments. Then a fund out of Singapore brought me on board as a partner in their VC fund, because they also wanted to start looking at Pakistan. They were looking at partners in Pakistan and they got me on board, made more investments, learned a lot, continued working with small businesses and startups on the accounting front, on the finance front, fundraising front, consulting front. I've continued seeing the same problem. And the problem was, a couple of problems were that they didn't know their numbers. And even if they did know their numbers, they really didn't know what to do with them. And that is what I think was, you know, one day we were just sitting at breakfast and we were like, you know, I think we can solve this for them.
We can productize it.
What they need from their numbers is different from your traditional accounting, reporting, annual accounts. They don't want balance sheets. They don't even understand it. But what they need, someone to tell them if their business is working or not through their numbers and what they need to do. And that's how we launched Metric.
Wow. Yeah. And it's... I really recognize what you're saying. I'm an accountant as well. I even worked at PwC also back in the day. And when we speak with a lot of founders, people are really afraid of numbers, right? They don't want to look at them. It's scary. It's this big black box. People have no clue and they're just running away from it. Omar, you and I know it's not that difficult, but you need to know what to look at. And if you look at like this whole range of numbers, you just get lost. And so indeed that handholding. So you started this in Pakistan with Metric. That's correct.
Yeah. We're Pakistani by origin. We started building this in Pakistan.
And so what was that first MVP that you were launching?
So the first MVP, and Omar is the one who first quit his job to start working on this full time, was this super basic, really ugly version of Metric, where people would be able to put in some basic inputs and be able to see some basic reports. But those reports...
Half the time it didn't even work.
Half the time it wouldn't work. But we actually just... The way we did it was, Omar quit his job. We were married. We had a baby at that time. And so I did not quit my job. I continued to work with the World Bank. Omar quit his job. And then we got this one paying client from Australia. And then we got a few more in Pakistan. And we started to look at what they needed from, you know, any platform that they would use. And we started to build pieces of tech and start to put it together and started to test it. So people were actually paying us to test our product for us as we built it. And that's how we built the first 6 months. We also put up a waiting list for Metric. And even in the first 6 months, we had about 800 businesses from 6 different countries that signed up without any marketing efforts on our end. So no paid marketing whatsoever, not even actually any unpaid marketing. We had 2 young girls who were managing our social media, but we still had 800 businesses sign up to test Metric and to use Metric before it even existed.
But fun fact, before Metric, it wasn't even called Metric. So Mike, in her introduction, she said this is like a virtual or CFO for businesses. Our first app was actually called Virtual CFO.
It's called the VCFO app.
We changed Metric to Metric a little later. So that's what the state of affairs was. Yeah. That's what our MVP was. Yeah.
And we didn't mention her before, but we have a CTO. Her name is Dr. Habiba. She's really awesome. So she had joined us right at the start. She was the one that was building out the tech. At that time, she was working with Microsoft as well and on the side kind of helping us. So she was basically doing two jobs at the same time, putting in full-time hours with us because she built out a full tech team. She hired our head of engineering at that time and then built out a full tech team and built the product for us. She's amazing. She has a PhD focusing on machine learning and computer science from the University of Illinois. She's based out of Sydney and she runs our complete in-house tech team for us.
Yeah, because indeed, you're that virtual CFO indeed, as you said, right? And and it's, I mean, if you look, what is that typical customer segment that you're looking at? Is that like small businesses, big businesses? What is that ideal customer?
So our ideal customer is a small business where the business owner themselves need an analytics tool to tell them if their business is doing well or not. So they may or may not have an accountant already. It is not the accountant who is using Metric. The accounting team or the accountant is putting in the inputs, but the business owner themselves is looking at what the app is telling them to do with their business. These are small businesses. They're in a plethora of different industries, but the major ones for us are e-commerce, which could even be social commerce. So it could be people selling through Instagram, through Facebook, through WhatsApp, et cetera, or through Shopify or other platforms. It is also food and beverage businesses. So cafes, restaurants are using us a lot. It's salons, small schools. So very, very SME sector, but not micro businesses. So we're not selling to mom and pop stores. Those are super hard to monetize. We're almost two levels of sophistication above that. So these are true small and medium enterprises that are focusing on growth, that are trying to grow their businesses as fast as possible and need support.
And I mean, this is a pretty hot space globally as well. In the US, for example, we see Digits and Puzzle. I mean, their valuations are almost insane, right? 560 million and 120 million are the valuations of those companies. But they're focused on the US. You are really in the MENA region, focusing on all the countries around there with a couple of offerings, because it all started out with the virtual CFO. That's your core products. But I know there's a couple of more products on the horizon.
Yeah. So we're at the heart of it. A true blue fintech, wherein that we want to offer financial products to the customers that we are serving. So the B2B SaaS or using Metric for your finances or and for your analytics is just the start. What we want to do is we want to professionalize and get these small businesses to the point where they're sophisticated enough that financial institutions will actually lend to them. And we want to be the platform through which that happens. So we want to be able to give working capital loans, to be able to give invoice financing products, to be able to make payments easy for these small businesses. And by the way, small businesses in emerging markets don't even get to have bank accounts, forget, you know, more sophisticated financial products, because the level of sophistication is so low. So we want to get them digitized. We want to get them to the point where they'll then be able to access funding that would truly allow them to grow. And also at the same time, we're building an AI piece to Metric. The backend is already built. It's going to be launched soon. It's called Max, which is a support for entrepreneurs, because again, entrepreneurship can be very, very lonely. So if you're sitting at home and you don't really know who to ask basic questions about your business, you can ask Max, because Max is able to answer, looking at your own numbers as well as sectoral data that we have from your region, and tell you, you know, should you be giving a discount next month? What percent discount should you be giving this month? Or even more basic questions about your own spending patterns or what seasonality in your business looks like, for example. So these are all the pieces that we're very excited about and building right now for Metric.
And if you look at other companies like QuickBooks, Xero, those are globally the big accounting software names. I like it how you say they're not your competitors, but they're actually your partners. You're working together with them. You have integrations. Can you share a bit more about that?
Yeah.
So Mikey, QuickBooks Xero is basically made for people like you and me.
Accountants.
The people who will be running the finances of a company, who will be reporting, who will be creating those financial accounts. And so that's why small business owners, especially in emerging markets, they themselves cannot use it. It's the same. They open it up. It's a comprehensive accounting software. They don't understand it. Even if they open it up, by the way, most of them, even if someone's using it for them, they've never opened it up themselves. And so they become our partners because if you are using QuickBooks and if you are using Xero, and we'll help you. If you're not, and we will also help you use QuickBooks if your business is at that level where we think you require a more comprehensive accounting solution, we'll actually onboard you to them ourselves. What that does for Metric is, and for us, is that the data that's flowing into Metric becomes more streamlined, it becomes more validated, and it becomes easily updated if you have an accountant who's doing QuickBooks and doing the entries for you. So our app integrates into QuickBooks automatically. Everything that's happening on your QuickBooks, that data gets pulled into Metric, and we process that data, we analyze it, and we give you the bite-sized insights that Metric does. And so QuickBooks, Xero, Zoho, Sage, eventually wherever wherever any financial data is happening in
or
your
transaction data.
Yeah. Any POS system, anything. Metric wants to connect to that and building all those integrations as we speak, because we wanted to make it no hassle for the founder. We want to translate it for you. You don't have to do anything. You get the Metric dashboard, you get the insights, you get mags, and you're not doing anything. Whatever you're using in your business, the data is there. It's someone just needs to pull it, translate it for you, and give it back to you. So that's how all these companies become our partners.
And do you have, you must have hundreds of stories. Do you have like one specific story? Like, oh, there was this entrepreneur on Metric and this is how we changed their business.
Yeah, there's one entrepreneur that I love talking about. So she has a phenomenal business, at, like truly a very like super healthy business. But what she wasn't realizing was that every time she'd go out and order more inventory, she wasn't really taking note of like which ones of her products were flying off the shelves and which ones were not. So even though she could see that her business was healthy, she couldn't really see, there was no cash in the bank. So she couldn't figure out where her money was. By using Metric, she realized by looking at the product report and seeing what her least performing products were, by looking at the inventory, she realized that so much of her cash was stuck in inventory, which was her least performing products. She then ran promotions. She was able to figure out what discount percentages she was able to offer. She was able to offload all of that, get money back in, reinvest that into her business, into the top performing products. And she was able to actually grow from just one market where she was operating into before to a whole new market and open up a whole new subsidiary of her company. So like, there's tons of stories like that. There's stories where people found out that there was fraud being committed in their companies and they were actually able to realize where that was happening and fix things for themselves. We've seen so many stories already, but I think this one with this woman founder, again, because specifically with women founder, I have constantly seen that they tend to be more afraid of numbers than men somehow. And I mean, this has to do with, I guess, how we're brought up and our relationship with money a lot of times too. So this particular story of this woman founder really resonates with me, and I'm so happy to see her growth constantly.
Yeah, and when you say it like this, it sounds very logical. Like, oh yeah, of course you look at your best and worst performing products, but it's so hard if you have this massive set of data, because that's what you typically have. And as a founder, you just have no clue where to start. And you can hire someone, of course, right? But that costs a lot of money. And that person needs to get the business. And by automating that, because that's, of course, what you're doing, by connecting that with Shopify, connecting that with anything else that where indeed a transaction goes through, that information is just shown to you so that you can act on it.
Yeah. And Mikey, and you know this, right? But your typical accountant would actually not make a top performing product report for you anyway. They would be making your very typical financial statements. They will not be making a report for you that shows you what your top products are or what your least performing products are.
They also do it 6 months later, so then it's not relevant anymore.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you need that real-time insight and that real-time data. So connecting it with indeed your bank, with your Shopify account. So just to make sure.
100%. One of the features that we have within Metric is goal setting. So as a business owner, you can set a goal to say, okay, I want next month to be 15% better than this month. And then the app will constantly tell you, okay, you need to sell 4 more cakes by the end of this month to be 15% better off than next month. And it will constantly show you that reminder every time you open the app. So you know you need to figure out how to sell 4 more cakes. And it's as simple and as basic and as direct as that.
Yeah, but that's how it works, right? You need to make it small. You need to simplify it. And then as an entrepreneur, you can act on it. That's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, everything what you're just telling me is like, wow, the tech behind it. That needs to be top notch, of course, to give those insights, to provide those insights to these entrepreneurs. You already mentioned your CTO, Habiba. Indeed, I spoke with her as well. An amazing lady. You mentioned the words data science, AI, ML. We get super happy about all those terminologies. But can you share a little bit more about the tech and what you're building around there?
No. So like Mina mentioned, all the tech is in-house. So it's all proprietary. And then within our tech, there is some proprietary elements to it, which we own. Obviously, the transactions or the analytics or the insights that we're giving, there are formulas behind that. There is a way to calculate that, how that data is coming in, what data is being used, because there is a whole engine which has to sift through data, which seems like an anomaly, or which seems that might be a mistake. If we would have just put an absolute value to the dollar data we have, it's in the trillions of dollars. But out of that, we're using a very small fraction, which goes through that engine, because we want these insights to be 100% accurate. And so that engine, that whole process that we're building, how to make sure that the data that we're using to analyze is validated, it's good data. That's the proprietary part. The formulas used to give insights like customer acquisition cost, and obviously these formulas are public knowledge, but you know, to build them into your tech and combined with that engine, it takes a little time. We built those. We're working on other stuff like a business health score, which will, again, like you mentioned, just keep it very simple for the entrepreneur. Is my business healthy? Yes, no. How healthy is it? So we're building a business health score, which will not only tell you from a scale to 0-100 where your business stands, but then how to keep that sort of number going up. Mina mentioned Max, the AI. It's built on completely proprietary data. So it's not like, you know, ChatGPT just crawling the whole web, because the data is the real asset. Anyone can use ChatGPT or anything to sort of connect it. And so that is our biggest asset. That's the insight that Metric can give. Other people don't have that data, and we get it right from the horse's mouth. Our Android app was rolled out first. Our web app came out last year. Our iOS MVP will be launched next week. That's how our tech is growing. And then obviously the next phase with the integrations and the embedded finance and all those fun stuff.
And it's just been with actually just the Android, and it's been used in 190 countries, and we have 130,000 businesses on the platform right now. The web app just rolled out, and the iOS MVP, it's been submitted to Apple already for review. So fingers crossed that it's also going to be live soon.
Data security is then the other topic that pops up for me, because with all the data that you're gathering, how are you managing that?
Yeah. So for our database, we're using Google Firestore, the top security level of Firestore, so that we don't have to have our own physical servers. And then also choosing Google was one of the reasons, was because of their security and the ability to segment your data in different regions. So every country will have their own data privacy laws, data security laws, which you have to comply with. So Google has all this infrastructure in different countries, and you can actually select on Firestore which data you want to keep where. And so that makes it really easy for us, not only just to comply, but also it's really important for us as well.
To make sure people are safe. We have a lot of internal protocols as well. So even I do not have access to your company's data. I have no idea how well a company is doing unless they tell me that they're doing better.
No, that's super good. You already touched a little bit upon the growth, where you have 130,000 businesses that are actually on the platform, 190 countries. You started to monetize a couple of months ago. The UAE is, I feel, the biggest growth market for you at this moment. Can you tell a bit more about that traction and that UAE expansion, and where you expect that future growth will come from?
Yeah, so we realized mid last year that the UAE, in terms of transaction volume, was just eclipsing every other country for us across the world, even though we had not done a single cent of marketing in this region. So, and even the 190 countries, this is organic. We did not market ourselves in any of these countries. People just kept on finding us and using us. It's been really insane and almost unbelievable the kind of things that have happened in this journey for us. And so for the UAE, we started seeing very early on that users here were just behaving very differently. They were type A users for us, and transaction volume just kept on increasing. And so we focused all of our efforts here, and we started monetizing a few months ago. We've grown 4x in the last 9 months. GCC in general, the UAE in particular, is our primary market where we've started localizations for the UAE. We have VAT that's already built in for businesses here. Metric integrates with QuickBooks, which is being used a lot here. We have 7 UAE banks already integrated. The next market that we're already starting to look at is Saudi. And for Saudi also, there are certain integrations and certain localizations that we need to build. For the region in general, we already have Arabic invoices. We're going to launch Arabic reporting soon. So yeah, we're building for this region. We're now headquartered in Abu Dhabi. We're part of the Hub 71 program here. They've invested in us. We're Mubadala backed through their Hub 71 program. And we're continuing to build for the region from here.
Yeah, you're currently raising your seed rounds and you're going for $1.5 million. I know you already have some really strong investors. We're not yet allowed to disclose all of their names on this podcast, but I've seen them. Trust me, they're really well-known global VCs.
Micah right? has met them.
I've even met them, true. And, but also Hub 71 from the UAE. So I know you have a mixture of global VCs, specifically US dominated, but also in the region, in the UAE, in Saudi, which is going to be aligned, of course, with your goals to further expand. And you also have a few investors from Pakistan. I2i Ventures is on there as well. I also know that you're in late stage due diligence with a VC firm from New York for that last piece of your round. What is this next milestone where these funds will take you?
Yeah. So our immediate milestone before the end of this year is to hit the $1 million ARR mark. For that, we need 1,600 subscribers. We're already on a couple of hundred. And over the next 2 years, we want to hit the $5 million in ARR and also to launch the things Mina mentioned. Obviously, Max is going to launch anyway, but the embedded finance piece, we want to grow the GTV numbers to get that mass required to actually start monetizing it through payments, through invoice finance, invoice links, through debit cards for businesses with partnerships with other companies. So by the end of year two, we want to reach a $5 million in ARR. And before the next round, we want to hit $10 million in ARR.
That sounds great. And we're just starting. It's all growing and you're building it. But as an investor, we're always looking at an exit as well. What do you see as potential exit scenarios?
So also both of us being ex-VCs, that was one of the first things, even while starting, we used to discuss. And obviously it changes as the journey goes. But right now, we're seeing a few very clear options already. You did mention Digicent Puzzle, where direction-wise, they're actually not as far as us, but funding-wise, they're way ahead because it's a US market, and obviously, they can see the value of it going into the future. So if and when they decide to expand into other regions and in any region that we would be at that point, it could be like a Careem Uber story where Uber came into the MENA market and it was better for them to acquire Careem instead of competing for those customers. So that's one thing we're looking at, and that's why we're following those companies as well, to see what sort of tech they're building. So IPO, future IPO is also an option for us in 7 to 10 years, especially regional IPOs. There is a lot of push regionally to have some local IPOs happen. Even the IPOs that have happened from here, they've listed on the NASDAQ. So now there's a really, really push from all these GCC and MENA governments that there should be some local IPOs. And whenever there is, it's so oversubscribed because they don't have much options. So that is something we're doing.
I think the government here is super supportive in that sense, and they really want startups to be built the right way so that value is created for everybody, including, in the end, the people who are left holding the bucket. So it is something that we want to prepare for.
Yeah. The third possible route, because we've been speaking to personnel at companies like S&P Global. We met casually at events with people from SAP. So these are like in data and analytics, investment advice and stuff. And because we are collecting private company financial data, aggregated, anonymized, of course, but we have those insights into markets and into sectors and into the types of companies where it's really hard to get any sort of data for these companies. So in 7 to 10 years, our analytics piece for companies like SAP and our data piece, especially financial and alternative financial data piece for companies like S&P Global. That is something, but we continue speaking to them just to understand what sort of data they find valuable. So it's not like after a few years, we're like, oh, we should have captured that financial or that data as well. So just to know and just to understand what investors look at and what these companies look at. That's our main asset. And so our asset is built properly.
Yeah. And in the end, again, because we're a cause-first organization, and a values first company. We want to make sure that whatever exit Metric has is the best for Metric users, frankly. And those are the ones that we care the most about, and we want to make sure that they're taken care of. So any company that we even consider exiting to, we would be looking at them in terms of their values and in terms of the value that they want to create for the world.
I love that. That sounds super good. To close our conversation, why should we invest in Metric? Why is this going to be the best investment that we can make?
So you should invest in any company that looks like it is going to make you serious money. And we think Metric will make you serious money because the numbers, I mean, anything, you can crunch them from any which direction. And even what Wenomer said, we want to get to $1 million in ARR, and it's going to take us 1,400 to 1,600 paid businesses to get there. Those numbers, when you compare them to the market that we're operating in and the market, the sheer volume of this market, that's like a drop in the bucket. So unlike a lot of other businesses, this is the advantage we have. The global reach we have is a major advantage that we've been handed, and that is something that we're going after. But you should invest in us also because we are truly the best team that is extremely well suited to be building this particular kind of company. The backgrounds we have, what we've been doing in the last 10 years, the knowledge we have of the markets that we're building in, of the people that we want to serve, I think that makes us extremely well suited to be building the kind of business that we're building. And finally, I think you should invest in businesses that are cost first, because those are the ones that will be able to persevere. We're building in an economic recession. We're building in, you know, bad times. And for us to be able to persevere, we have to have extremely high resilience and be very, very gritty. And those are the kind of founders we are. And I think in the last 2 years, we've had many things that we've had to overcome. And we're still standing and we still believe in our cause. And we are still very strong on our why. We're looking for people to partner with us who have the same kind of cause as us, who have the same kind of values as us, who are in it for the right reasons. Yes, we'll all make money when we create value for the world. When you create value for anybody else, the universe creates value for you. And that's a core belief of ours. You should invest in us if you have the same beliefs as us, if you have the same values as us, if you have the same cause as us. And that's in the end, you know, the bottom line.
That sounds super good. I'm in. Thank you so much, Nina and Omar, for all your information. Stay tuned, and we will continue our podcast with Hester and one of our Epic Angels investors to hear more about why we're interested to invest in Metric.
Thank you, Mikey.
Thank you.
Bye.
Now let's hear from the investors what they have to say about this startup. And please remember, we're not a financial advisor. All opinions expressed by Epic Angels are intended as educational and reflect the personal research and experiences of the team.
Maria Carolina Romero, or MC in short, is one of our most seasoned investors. She lives between Switzerland and Dubai and is mentor and coach to many early stage founders, including for programs such as Techstars and Cartier. Nina and Omar are two of the founders that MC has been closely working with for 2.5 years, getting them to where they are today. So we are looking forward to getting the inside scoop. Great to have you with us, MC. So tell us, first of all, how did you meet Mina and Omar, and how did you see them grow?
Yeah, so I started working in the same project with Mina with the World Bank. So at the very beginning, we were peers, and that's the first encounter that I had with Mina. And Umar was part of my CFO virtual for many of the women-led ventures of the We Raise program of the World Bank in Pakistan. So that was the very first time that I met both. And I think around 6 months after they started their journey in Metric. So I had, let's say, two types of relationship with them. One from a workplace. And at the same time, I saw them from the early start of Metric, their first fundraising, and well, and all their journey up to today.
That's exciting. And as a mentor and coach, you have seen many startup founders. Right? Is there anything that you see in Mina and Omar that you have not seen in others?
Yeah, and especially in Pakistan that I saw many, many companies, many startups. So I think there are three things in there, particularly about them, that strike me. Number one is both have investor experience before. So they have the investor experience. The two of them are quite complementary skills. So on one side, Umar, exactly. That's what he did voluntarily for many startups. And on top of that, so he recognized the need from a technical part, and Mina after working with so many startups. So it wasn't like, let's create a problem here. They actually found the problem while they were working daily with the startups. And yeah. The third piece is also, I have seen them working with others. The team that they have, the way the leadership, like, you know, like these guys have been, I have seen them in the best moment of Pakistan and in the most critical moment, they were, the microeconomics were really bad, dry VC, and then they were leading their team every single day, passionate with values, like unbelievable, and always very caring about whatever they are doing, there's a purpose behind. So I think those three combinations for me are what make them stand out, on top of course, all of the qualifications that both have and the charm, because at the two of them in their particular ways, they are very empathetic and charming as founders. Yeah.
Yes. And also together, I think, to your point, indeed, that they love what they do. What struck me is what Mina said. I mean, she clearly, she loves entrepreneurship. She started as an entrepreneur when she was six. It's just in her blood. She loves entrepreneurs, and that is who she's building for. So she absolutely loves what she does. And I think that that shows. Maike, what is it for you that makes them stand out from others?
No, for sure. And what I liked as well is how they're looking into their future. They're not just looking at today, but they're also really looking forward, how they're already very clearly are having those conversations with potential acquisition partners. Like, hey, what is that data that really matters that is going to be super valuable? Looking at it from the entrepreneur perspective, that's number one. Of course, we need to make sure we help the entrepreneur. But at the same time, hey, how can we create value for everyone by building the right data sets? So really looking at it from all the different angles and building the future of Metric in a very sustainable way.
That is an interesting one, right? So what they do now, they say we are true blue fintech, doing what they're doing today. But the future that they painted, so that includes working capital loans and access to funding that allows these small companies to grow. What do you think is most critical for their success?
So one of the things, going back to the strengths, I must say that I'm very biased because I know them personally and I have seen the entire growth, is that they are very focused. So normally it's not that they wanted to build the world from, like, since day one. Their aspirations definitely are amazing. Like, you know, I'm very futuristic, as you could see. But they literally grow with a very strong focus. So I think that keeping at that discipline from that perspective, I think it's important. The second thing is about governance, because they can do it themselves, but they need very strong governance that can actually push them to the other milestone. So that would be something that they will need. And the third thing also is they have the network. And if they don't have, because one of the main things that I have been absolutely surprised. So when they decided to move out from Pakistan in order to move in the UAE, what amazed me is that in less than 1 month, especially Mina was able to connect with everyone from customers, potential investors, government. So I think those skills are quite critical for everything that they want to do next.
And you can see that as well in the type of investors that they've been able to get into their rounds, where there's global investors that are very dominant, but also the local investors that you need. And specifically in a market like the GCC market, you need to have the right people behind you to support your growth, to really set you up for success and actually give you a chance in the market there.
Yeah, that must have not been easy, right? To start in that market, and they've really given it their all. Do we know anything about competition in their market?
As for direct competition right now, because we did look into it, I mean, Digits and Puzzle, as they mentioned, right? They're in the US with these insane valuations and even behind in terms of products. That's very funny. But in the GCC region, there are a couple that are starting to pop up. So you do see a little bit of movement right now, but they're still pretty far behind on where they are right now. You see a couple of more accounting softwares, because of course, people could also decide my competition is basically the accountant that does it for me. Of course, right? Or you get a real good CFO in-house if you're big enough. So they're really in that sweet spot and they're not competing with that accounting software, but actually working together with it. And I think that that's also a very big strength of what they have.
And also because I know a few of their customers here. And then for them is like, there's the educational component. is not, I'm going to give you everything, but do you want to learn to actually understand yourself? So literally they are fulfilling their purpose, and is that actually business owners can understand their unit economics and can be able to identify for future growth, which I think goes hand in hand with everything that they, like how purpose-driven the two of them are.
Exactly. I can see that's where it's going to go in the future, right? Where this data and predictions, et cetera, are going to be so precise and so personalized that you actually cannot live without it anymore. I think this product will be super sticky, how they are developing it. That's great. What about the scale? This type of company, you can imagine it requires significant scale. So because average revenues per SME can be relatively low, customer acquisition can be expensive. How do you see that model?
You are touching something that one of the main questions I asked them always was about precisely the customer acquisition cost. And the way that Mina explained at the very beginning, precisely like it was about literally just having a beta testing. And then suddenly without any marketing, they had a wait list. It was the same, the way why they moved to the UAE, it was not only because of the proximity to Pakistan. It was also because they started to see many business owners signing in for the app, coming from the GCC, and then they were, why? What is happening in UAE that we are not seeing? So I actually like exactly that street smartness, that market validation, and then that also shown that the scalability was not that costly because, let's say, they don't have that much marketing. It's more from the word of mouth and actually people trying to look for those type of solutions.
Yeah, I think that's super strong. Eh? How they indeed, they basically didn't spend anything on marketing so far.
Here.
And already are at this stage. I mean, we started to speak with Metric almost a year ago. So we've also from Epic Angels seen their progress where they were a year ago versus now. And it's just been insane to see their traction, to see that growth. And specifically with the move to the UAE, they just knocked it out of the park, I would say. It's been really impressive without any substantial cost.
Yeah, it seems like they created a pool, right? Rather than a push. They launched in the market and the pool was there, which is, you know, it's hard to beat. Yeah, well, 4x growth in the last 9 months. That says it all.
And then also from a technology point of view, the way that they have built in-house, I like the CTO is quite impressive.
Habiba is amazing. Yeah, I spoke with her as well. Yeah,
exactly. And then the way that they have built entire infrastructure so that in the future, precisely, for scalability goes really fast. They have the freedom to operate. That also gives me a lot of confidence. And how the types of speed, how they actually could come here to GCC and especially in UAE and penetrate the market, that's something that, again, I think from a scalability purposes, that won't be my red flag in order to invest in them at this stage.
Yeah. It's good to note. Hey, and then exit, right? I mean, we're still investors, so we're looking at exit. Where does the company go? So they mentioned a few options, data analytics and data aggregators, so private companies that need insights in markets and sectors, IPO, of the ones that they mentioned. What do you think is the most likely scenario?
What I have seen mostly is literally the Careem, especially here in GCC, is the Careem model, which is any of the ones in the US that actually wants to start here in the MENA region. Why on earth, you know, to spend all of that money just literally by the best performer here with the largest traction and get in. And that was something that I was talking to Mina and Umar last time. And then they were saying that, yes, and there might be another more like consolidation for companies that are not super well-funded like the ones that they mentioned before. But for example, one like QuickBooks or Xerox that want to emphasize more on the SME target market, then that would be also a nice consolidation to have if they want to move to this part of the world.
Like SAP, right? Like those.
Exactly. Yeah.
Large.
That was another one. Yeah. IPO, that would be our dream, but let's see. I'm based on my portfolio, I'm very positive with the trade sales or the consolidations, and then at least for me, for my exit strategy, they have paid well. So yeah.
What do you usually look at in startups? You see so many startups. What sets the successful ones apart from the less successful ones for you?
Team. The team, and the team. Yeah. It's like
the three you see in the team.
So complementarity of skills, resilience, and then mindset, meaning like this story is about companies that they just want to come local. No, like this global mindset and, you know, and everything is doable and we will make it happen. On top of that, of course, they understand what they are doing and they are quite tech. So that combination between the technical and the business, that is what I'm seeing here. Those are the things that for me immediately, yeah, it checks the boxes.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
I just want to say that literally the two of them are great, but Mina is a force of nature. She has pulled out every single thing that we have been doing, that I have, let's say, been her witness, or that we have worked together, and is a person that truly cares about the others. It's like she genuinely loves people and how to put them, like how to be a platform for success of others. So when I was listening to her story at Metric, that's precisely like, how can we create that platform for business owners to grow? So that for me, it links completely to who they are and the purpose of life. That would be the last 2 cents. And of course, I'm investing in.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to meet you all. Nice to see you, Mikey.
Ciao. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed looking behind the scenes. The objective of this podcast is to demystify angel investing and to share insights so you can learn more about the world of venture capital. Interested to see if you can become an angel investor yourself? Contact us via info@epicangelnetwork.com or go to our website at epicangelnetwork.com.